Night raids on Palestinian homes and attacks by Israeli settlers on Palestinian farmers, Italian media hardly refers to an escalation of violence.
Last Saturday, thousands of people flooded the central square in the Italian capital to show their support to the Palestinians, but no mainstream media outlets bothered to cover the demonstration.
The media didn't elaborate on what was happening in Italy. They showed, London, New York, other places in the world, and they didn't really focus on all of Italy was protesting against this occupation.
In 2002, an Italian journalist was killed by an Israeli attack in Ramallah. 9 years later, another journalist was killed in the Gaza Strip. I think the public broadcaster should honor the memory of these two men by reporting on the Palestinian plight in an unbiased manner. As usual, supranational, political, and economic interests are prioritized over objective reporting.
A national demonstration dubbed Stop the Israeli Occupation will be held in Rome on Saturday, May 29. Thousands of Italians are expected to join the rally from all over the country. Max Civili, Rome.
Bishop Talbot Swan, a highly respected civil rights activist, expressed a sympathy and solidarity among the African American community for the Palestinians as outrage over Israel's actions has continued to grow.
If any people should resonate with what's going on in Palestine, it's black people in America. Even when we look at what's happening on the streets in our nation, many police departments across America actually go to Israel to be trained by the military in so-called counterterrorism strategies. And then they come here into black communities and employ those strategies on black citizens. So we fully understand their struggle. It resonates with us, and we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
For many, the fact the U.S. government funds Israel while reparations owed to black Americans have yet to be paid is hypocritical.
They can find nearly $4 billion a year to give to Israel, but they can't find any money to give to African Americans who descended from enslaved Africans. It's a travesty. It's a shame. And we're not asking for a handout. We're not asking for you to do us a favor. That's money that is owed. That's a debt that the United States has yet to pay.
Like many faith leaders, Bishop Swan reiterated his continued support for the Palestinians in the face of racist apartheid.
Oppressed people all over the world are watching what's happening. We are standing in solidarity with you. We are pushing and pressing for governmental structures to condemn the violence, to stop the funding of terrorism, because that's exactly what it is. And we want them to remain steadfast, to be strong, and to know that we are behind them.
The demands for the U.S. to stop funding Palestinian oppression and to implement justice for black America will continue as long as the status quo remains in place. Support for the Palestinians has undoubtedly intensified, with millions of people around the world condemning Israel, demanding an end to the occupation of Palestine. Richard Sudam, London.
A ceasefire took hold on Friday in the Gaza Strip as Israel and Hamas agreed to halt nearly 2 weeks of fighting that left hundreds dead and parts of the impoverished Gaza Strip destroyed. There were no reports of violations early Friday, though each side said it stood ready to retaliate for any attacks by the other.
After the ceasefire, I'm sending words of thanks and appreciation for the Palestinian resistance and for the countries who supported Palestinians with both money and weapons, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran that offered everything and stood with Palestinians to a great extent.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip took to the streets and held celebrations of their victory, embracing one another in front of bombed buildings. Palestinians in Gaza could not mark Eid al-Fitr festival at Ramadan conclusion due to the Israeli airstrikes. On Friday, postponed Eid celebrations were held throughout Gaza.
This is a celebration of our victory. We celebrate winning and teaching the inhumane Israeli regime a lesson that we won't remain silent over its crimes, even if it costs us everything, even our children and homes. This is the road of our resistance till Palestine is free.
We spent days of Ramadan waiting for aid, and then this escalation started, but we all supported Al-Aqsa and Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem. Gazans did all of this to support Palestinians in Jerusalem. We didn't count on any other country. We supported each other and defended Al-Aqsa.
More than 10 days of attacks killed at least 240 Palestinians in Gaza, including 66 children, wounded more than 1,900, and damaged critical infrastructure and thousands of homes, according to officials. The clashes began when the Israeli regime attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque and started its eviction plans of Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Jerusalem.
We are all here now in high spirits. We have witnessed three wars, and today Gaza didn't give up defending Palestinians. We are glad of this victory, and we appreciate the efforts of our resistance that did everything to support us and defend our rights.
After days of Israeli strikes, people are here celebrating their victory, stressing to support the Palestinian resistance in the face of the Israeli violations of Palestinian rights. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Anniversary of the liberation of Khurram Shah. May marks the anniversary of the liberation of the port city of Khurram Shahr by Iranian combatants, and a real turning point in the 8-year imposed war on the Islamic Republic of Iran. We have prepared for you a special feature in this regard. Please stay with us. Khunin Shahr, or Bloody City, was again known by its original name, Khurram Shahr, and people commemorated this epic operation, which resulted in this strategic port city being liberated from Ba'athist occupation. The martyrs who sacrificed their lives to protect the city against the savage Ba'athist invasion, and those martyrs who lost their lives to liberate the city, will be forever remembered. Khurram Shahr returned to Iran, and the Islamic Republic gained the upper hand, both militarily and politically, in the war which the former Iraqi dictator Saddam had started. The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants against the armed-to-the-teeth Iraqi army was truly an epic, marked with courage and bravery. But for sure, liberation of Khurram Shahr shines like a star in the struggle in the way of God. This border city is located in southwestern Iran, adjacent to the important Arvand Rud or Arvand River, and is considered one of Iran's most strategic ports. For this reason, in his invasion of 22nd of September 1980, Saddam put much emphasis and propaganda on occupying Khurram Shahr, which at the time was Iran's largest commercial port. The former Iraqi dictator had even dreamed that the port city would collapse within 3 days. The regional stooge of the Western and Eastern blocs never imagined that Iran's brave and indefatigable combatants could resist for 34 days, with minimal weaponry and almost empty-handed, against the all-out assault of the Ba'athist war machine. Iran's military and popular forces fought with their bare hands, showing unbelievable courage defending Khorramshahr, and they successfully fended off the much better equipped Ba'athist army's assaults on the port city. In fact, the port city of Khorramshahr became the symbol of resistance of Iranian combatants, a byword for resistance. Eventually, a few Iranian combatants witnessed the fall of Khorramshahr when it was completely besieged by the enemy. Thus, the Iranian people called the city Khuninshahr, or Bloody City, a reference to the spilt blood of young Iranian defenders of the port city. From 28th of October 1980, when Khorramshahr fell to the Ba'athist enemy, the brave combatants, commanders, and the people of Iran wished dearly to liberate the city, an objective which took a full 19 months to realize. During this period, the army and the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, in various operations inflicted heavy losses on Saddam's forces, the most important of which was Salman al-Aimmeh operation that effectively ended the siege of Abadan, a larger port city to the south of Khorramshahr. The staging of this operation, only 11 months after occupation of Khorramshahr, raised hopes and expectations about liberation of Khorramshahr. But the enemy intended to keep this strategic city at any cost. The military fortifications around Khorramshahr looked impregnable, and Iraqi soldiers haughtily wrote on the walls of the city, "We have come to stay." The Iraqis also set up the Basra Khorramshahr bus and taxiway, and Baghdad radio used to give weather broadcasts of Khorramshahr as an Iraqi city. But the Iranian forces, paying no attention to this propaganda, designed a plan to liberate this part of the country with much precision and trust in God Almighty. In spring of 1982, the plan for liberating Khorramshahr was finalized. Saddam's regime, mindful of the fact that Iran's Muslim combatants may soon take action to retake the city, bolstered their defenses in the area. Now Khorramshahr was turned into a military fort, and the Iraqi dictator boasted by saying, "If Iranians can retake Khorramshahr, I'm ready to give them the keys to Basra." But the Iranian forces, especially the besieged volunteer forces, launched the Bayt al-Muqaddas operation on 30th of April, in four phases, to liberate Khorramshahr and its surrounding areas. All that time, Saddam's army had deployed nearly 40,000 infantry forces, 2,700 tanks and personnel carriers, and 500 artillery equipment in the area. But the Iranian combatants started the operation from the point the enemy never imagined, crossing the Great Karun River and launching a surprise attack on enemy positions. Was an extremely dangerous task, which was only possible with the high morale and self-sacrifice of Muslim combatants who had put their trust in God. Martyr Hassan Bagheri, the young commander and prominent military strategist, explained the crossing of the River Karun by itself was a separate operation for military units. He added, "The significance of the attack was that crossing a 230-meter-wide river and penetrating behind enemy lines as deep as 30 kilometers was carried out at a single night with the use of infantry forces. While it took 3 days for the Ba'athist army to cross the same Karun River when it wanted to besiege the port city of Abadan. After crossing the tough natural obstacles such as the river and swamp and pushing aside the defensive fortifications of the enemy under adverse weather conditions, the Iranian combatants reached the strategic Khorramshahr Ahvaz road. This news was a very big shock for the arrogant Iraqi dictator Saddam. Thus, Saddam commanded that the highway should be retaken immediately, or else the troops who had retreated would face a military tribunal. There was a very tough clash, and the Iranian forces were exposed to modern Iraqi tanks and equipment. Their resistance was astonishing, and a real example of divine help. Top military strategist Mata Hassan Bagheri described the scene of the battle as follows. The second night of operation, the Iraqis with an independent brigade made up of 10 armored vehicles of the strongest type attacked the road in a state of frenzy. Several units of their tanks succeeded in reaching the asphalt road close to the embankment of our forces. It seemed that everything was lost. But since the goal of the combatants was a divine goal, they had to besiege him. The commander said that it was necessary for the combatants to say Allahu Akbar, or God is great, which was very effective on the front lines. Thus, the combatants started to chant Allahu Akbar, God is great, whilst attacking the enemy lines. The Iraqis were horrified. The crew and drivers of the tanks of the Iraqi brigade left their tanks and fled. Those who were furthest back fled with their tanks, and the enemy assault was repelled with the help of God Almighty and the weapon of Allahu Akbar. The main reason for the victory of the Islamic Republic of Iran during the liberation of Khorramshahr was the advance of Iranian forces to the border and approaching the port city of Basra on the Iraqi side of the border. Saddam's army commanders thought that Iran had planned to capture Basra, so they changed their military array, whilst the brave Iranian combatants turned to Khorramshahr and with a broad attack on 24th of May 1982, took the resistant and heroic city out of the clutches of the enemy. Saddam's unrealistic ambition to hold on to the city resulted in the death and wounding of 16,000 Iraqi troops, and the capture of a further 19,000. Also, 40 Iraqi warplanes and 280 tanks were destroyed, and a large number of heavy and light weaponry were captured by the Islamic combatants of Iran. Iranians rejoiced at the epic liberation of Khorramshahr, which was a thunderbolt, literally a bolt out of the blue, for the enemy and its western and eastern backers. This great victory shook Saddam's army to its very core and demoralized the Ba'athist forces, who fled in droves. With regards to the crushing effect of liberation of Khorramshahr on Saddam, his son-in-law, Hussein Kamel, once commented, "In the first 24 hours, Saddam was under such heavy spiritual pressure that a physician was always at his side." But behind the military operations of liberation of Khorramshahr, there were other epics that gave the operation such an outstanding and unique status. The heroic acts of the Muslim combatants of Iran were so magnanimous that they look unbelievable to the readers and listeners of the accounts of the operation. During the operation, the Muslim combatants, before relying on their military equipment and their war plans, put their trust in the divine power and assistance first. This morale existed in all of Iran's operations during the 8-year Holy Defense against Saddam's army, but it was more apparent during the Beit al-Muqaddas operation. The Iranian besieged and popular forces fought bravely with no fear of death, and this high morale terrified Saddam's army. One of the Iranian army commanders says, "In Beit al-Muqaddas operation, I was in the camp of prisoners of war. I saw a tall Iraqi captive whose uniform showed that he was a commander in the Ba'athist army. We asked him how they were defeated. He showed me a Basiji, a member of Iran's volunteer Basij forces, and said, "This is more dangerous than a bomb. He is not afraid of anything at all." The chivalric disposition and adherence of Iranian combatants to humane values during and after the operation was also very constructive. According to the Iraqi captives, the behavior of the Iranian forces with them was quite humane and Islamic. One of the Iranian combatants narrates that after victory in one of the phases of the Bayt al-Muqaddas operation and capturing a number of prisoners, we wanted to use them to carry the wounded away from the front lines. But when the battalion commander was informed of this, he strongly opposed it, saying that these Iraqis had surrendered themselves and they might not like to work. Then he immediately went to the nearest Iraqi captives and told them to lay down the stretcher and the wounded individuals. Then he took the stretcher from the first captive and laid it down. Then he kissed the face of the captive and told them to march on. Although it seemed absolutely impossible to liberate Khorramshahr based on material calculations, this great goal was achieved via high spirits and sincere intentions and sacrifices of the Iranian combatants. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, said about the seemingly unbelievable operation, "God liberated Khorramshahr." This shows that pure faith and full trust of the combatants in God and His infinite power and wisdom made an impossible thing possible. It is interesting to know that the day of liberation of Khorramshahr has been named as the National Day of Resistance and Victory in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Palestinians have poured to the streets to celebrate their victory over Israel in the 11-day fighting between the two sides. Rallies were held across the besieged Gaza Strip in condemnation of the Israeli regime and celebration of its defeat. Gatherings were also held in the occupied West Bank, where joyful participants cheered for the victory for the resistance. The celebrations came after an Egypt-brokered ceasefire went into effect on Friday morning, ending the fiercest battle there in years. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire, but this time Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. Experts believe that Israel has succumbed to the unprecedented response by the Palestinian resistance and agreed to the ceasefire without any preconditions.
I think it's a huge win. The fact is that never before have we seen Israel penetrated militarily, psychologically, and morally in this way before. The sheer numbers of Palestinian resistance missiles that actually penetrated the Iron Dome is absolutely incredible. This much-vaunted dome, which was meant to protect the Israeli civilians, essentially collapsed because, my estimation, is around 30% of the missiles got through. And what were these missiles? Essentially, they were just homemade rockets. Not only that, what we've seen is that this, for the first time, turned into an insurrection within occupied Palestinian territory. Within the colony itself, they call Israel, you saw huge numbers of Palestinians demonstrating and rising up, and actually huge clashes took place. A lot of that would have been suppressed.
People across the world have shown their solidarity with Palestinians in the past few days. In the United States, protesters called for the cessation of all funding to Israel. As the Israeli regime was targeting the people of Palestine, the U.S. administration approved the sale of $735 million in precision-guided weapons to the Israeli regime. The arms deal is now pending the approval of Congress. Several American congresspeople, including Senator Bernie Sanders and House Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Mark Pocan, and Rashida Tlaib, objected to the plan and introduced motions to block the sales. But given the traditionally strong support for Israel in the Congress, the motions will almost certainly fail.
The U.S. is totally $3.5 billion per annum is donated by Israel to by America to Israel in order to sustain its arms industry. As the bombs were falling Palestinian children, you found that Joe Biden cleared $750 million of aid for arms and missiles to Israel. So that was the initial response of America.
In the meantime, U.S. President Joe Biden has welcomed the ceasefire, expressing hope that it would hold. He, however, reaffirmed the U.S. support for the Israeli regime. Several Israeli political and military figures have questioned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's motives for launching the offensive on the Gaza Strip and approving a ceasefire without any strategic breakthrough for the regime. Netanyahu's political opponents speculate that the premier ordered the strikes after he failed to establish a coalition cabinet to put an end to Israel's political stalemate. But the developments over the past 2 weeks have shown that the next time the regime ventures an offensive against Gaza, it could face consequences more serious than a political vacuum in Tel Aviv.
The United States and its arch-rival China may have toned down their rhetoric against each other compared to the chaotic era of former U.S. President Donald Trump. But tensions between the two superpowers are simmering as they remain deeply engaged in an intense global rivalry. There are many flashpoints in their testy relationship, one being the resource-rich South China Sea. Chinese and American military vessels have had numerous encounters there. This week, China said an American warship illegally entered its territorial waters in the sea, but was expelled by Chinese ships and planes. Beijing was quick to slam the U.S. action, branding it as a violation of China's sovereignty. Beijing warned that such moves undermine regional peace and stability. However, the U.S. Navy said its vessel asserted navigational rights and freedoms near a number of islands claimed by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam. China believes that America has fully abandoned its supposed neutrality in the region and is clearly siding with nations which have rival territorial claims in the South China Sea.
The United States is trying to transform these maritime disputes in the South China Sea. These are typical maritime disputes that you'll find all over the world, including in places like Europe, between European nations. The U.S. is trying to transform this from mere disputes into a regional, even global conflict, because they need to have a pretext to justify their military remaining in the region.
Naval tensions between the U.S. and China are not limited to the South China Sea. Earlier this week, an American destroyer sailed through the Taiwan Strait, angering Beijing, which considers self-ruled Taiwan a breakaway region that must one day be reunited with the mainland. China wants the U.S. to respect its territorial integrity and has repeatedly warned that this red line must never be crossed. Technological rivalry between the United States and China is expanding fast, especially in highly advanced sectors like 5G, artificial intelligence, and the semiconductor industry. The U.S. Senate voted this week to advance a bill authorizing well over $100 billion for technology research in the face of Chinese rivalry. The Endless Frontier Act is a huge investment in emerging sciences and manufacturing on a scale not seen in decades. The legislation has bipartisan support. Politicians from both major camps in the United States have a rising sense of urgency to bolster America's ability to compete with China. The urgency was also highlighted in U.S. President Joe Biden's first speech to Congress last month. During his address, the U.S. president left no doubt that America will do its utmost to outpace the Asian superpower in terms of trade and technology. Biden identifies China as the toughest foreign policy challenge. His administration is trying hard to reduce American reliance on Chinese technology in areas that Washington believes raise national security risks and protect critical technologies from being transferred to China. The U.S. president has also said the American military will maintain a strong presence in the Indo-Pacific, where the U.S. has been trying to contain the growing influence of its arch-rival. The Biden administration has toned down anti-Beijing rhetoric, but what's certain is that America is determined to follow policies aimed at containing the Chinese influence worldwide.
The United States has been the sole superpower for decades, and then with the resurgence of Russia and now China's rise, they're watching their global primacy slip away. So even though there's many excuses for why they have this conflict with China, the main reason is they cannot accept that China, even though it has a larger population and plenty of resources, they cannot accept the fact that China is going to surpass them.
As the U.S. intensifies efforts against its main global rival, China is expected to pursue its own ways to catch up with and even overtake America in different fields.
The boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement has urged people around the world to boycott Israeli and multinational firms complicit in Tel Aviv's regime's abuse of Palestinian human rights. Fresh call comes amid Israel's relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip. There's a growing consensus that Israel now, like South Africa in the past, is an apartheid state that must be met with targeted sanctions, boycotts, and divestment.
Well, I would not say that the governments of any countries have the will to try and boycott Israel or take any really clear measures against Israel. But I would say that among students and among, for example, the Arab American movement in the U.S., I think there is more of a will to say, no, we have to cut off the arms to Israel. We have to cut off the aid and the trade to Israel, exactly as we did with apartheid South Africa. There's more of a will to say that.
The movement says the measures can help challenge the complicity of international firms in Israeli crimes against Palestinians and help the struggle of Palestinians for freedom, justice, and equality. BDS activists are now trying to translate the activism that has been generated among celebrities and cultural icons into meaningful change. Football figures in the UK and the Arab world, Black Lives Matter activists in the UK, as well as several progressive U.S. lawmakers, have voiced their opposition to Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the occupied territories. The movement says there is growing consensus that, like South Africa in the past, Israel is an apartheid regime that must be met with action.
These students have built up a level of confidence now that makes them react more loudly when Israel starts mass bombardments of the Palestinian people. So you have more confident crowds of protesters, and that is driving these few liberal politicians to push President Biden in the direction of cutting off the military aid to Israel. And Biden is an old Zionist who doesn't want to do that ever, but they are pushing him more in that direction.
A fresh round of violence started after Israeli troops and settlers announced plans to expel dozens of Palestinians from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. Illegal Israeli settlers are looking to take over the properties of Palestinian families. This is not an isolated incident. Since its creation in 1948, Israel has used discriminatory and racist policies against Palestinians in various forms. There is now a general consensus that the racist policies of the Israeli regime are similar to the ones implemented by the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Black Lives Matter is more loud and clear and confident about opposing Israel because Israel so much resembles apartheid South Africa. And the willingness of some politicians, as you mentioned, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, the willingness of some politicians to oppose Israel, to oppose aid to Israel, is something new. They are gradually inching their way towards saying cut off the military aid to Israel. They're not there.
The BDS movement seeks to raise global awareness about these policies and discourage companies from doing business with the occupiers of Palestinian lands. The BDS movement, which is modeled after the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, was initiated in 2005 by over 170 Palestinian organizations that were pushing for various forms of boycott against Israel until it met its obligations under international law. Thousands of volunteers worldwide have since then joined the BDS movement. Israel has spared no effort to undermine the movement. Back in 2011, Knesset passed the measure to curb its activities.
I cannot think of anything more foolish than to say that you want to have any kind of divestment or sanctions or whatever, or boycott against a country that, when all is said and done, is the only democracy in the region.
We must continue to stand firm against the profoundly biased campaign to delegitimize the state of Israel through boycotts, divestment, and sanctions.
The BDS movement is often linked to those kinds of frames. So yes, sir, I will continue to condemn the BDS movement.
The Tel Aviv regime has started a huge lobby campaign with pro-Israeli groups around the world to undermine the BDS. Back in 2019, U.S. House lawmakers passed a bipartisan resolution condemning the movement.
On May 15, 1948, the regime forced some 750,000 Palestinians to leave their homes and villages and expelled them into refugee camps that still exist in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Armed forces massacred entire villages of men, women, and even children. That pushed rightful owners of Palestine to leave their homes and lands as they feared losing their lives. Consequently, that provided the ground for Zionists to establish the Israeli regime. The Palestinians were to suffer further when the West Bank and Gaza fell to the Israelis during the Six-Day War in 1967. Millions of Palestinians, including those displaced since 1948, found themselves under military occupation as well as further Israeli expansionism in their lands. In 2020, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled his intention to annex the occupied West Bank with the support of the United States. The move is widely condemned as it is considered illegal and in defiance of international law. For many Palestinians, that is just the last chapter in a process that started with the initial loss of their lands in 1948. More than 600,000 Israelis currently live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. That's while all Israeli settlement activities are illegal under international law. Every year, Palestinians reaffirm their right to return to their homes and villages in historic Palestine on Nakba Day. They hold annual rallies to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the regime to establish what's known today as Israel. This year, Palestinians and their supporters across the globe mark the day amid Israel's deadly aggression against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli government is taking more land in the West Bank. More than two-thirds of the West Bank has been swallowed by the Israeli settlements. And every day they are also taking more land in Jerusalem. As we have seen in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, they are kicking Palestinians out of their hand, of their homes and lands in order to replace them with Israeli, with Jewish settlers. It will continue because the Palestinians are not willing to surrender to the Israeli to the Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing.
In a pre-dawn airstrike, Israeli warplanes attacked Al-Shati refugee camp in western Gaza on Saturday. 8 children and 2 women were killed while 15 others were injured. Following that, Hamas's military wing, the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, said it has fired tens of rockets at Tel Aviv and Ashdod in retaliation for Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip. The Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades also said they launched drone and mortar attacks on Israel's Kisafim military base. The group has announced it is prepared to bomb Tel Aviv for 6 months in a row. Hamas has recently stepped up attacks on Israel in response to the regime's aggression on the besieged territory. Israel's Ramon Airport, as well as cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod, have also come under missile attacks in the past few days. On Saturday afternoon, the Israeli regime also flattened the 11-story Al Jalla building that housed the offices of Al Jazeera and the Associated Press News Agency. Press freedom advocates sharply condemned the move, calling it a brazen attempt to silence journalists covering the Israeli military's ongoing offensive that has killed scores of people.
They will continue to do so because they are launching a war against not only the Palestinian people but also against the media that's showing the real Israeli face and real Israeli violations of human rights.
Targeting the media organizations and journalists in Israeli military offensives in the Gaza Strip isn't an accident. This is systematic targeting of media in Gaza in order to prevent reporting from there and to create a cloak of secrecy around Israeli crimes.
The Light.
Let's go to Russia to take a look at St. Petersburg's largest celebration in the spring, the Tulip Festival. Around 200,000 tulips from 100 varieties are on display in the colorful gala. It includes 15 extremely rare flower species. Russian artists also participated in the event to promote their traditional culture through various performances. The annual festival, held in Kirov Central Park, attracts hundreds of visitors. This year's event will run until late May.
A French artist has placed the Eiffel Tower on a cliff using optical illusion on the famous landmark. In his work, street artist J.R. has removed the River Seine or Seine with an imaginary street that would go from the Trocadero to the Eiffel Tower. This work is a collage of several layers of paper which are not to last long due to their rain and the crowd that will walk on it. According to the artist's post on Instagram, the idea is to find a place perfectly reproducing the Eiffel Tower and have fun taking pictures by the imaginary cliff or jumping over the gaping chasm.
In Thailand, three sniffer dogs have joined the fight against the third wave of the pandemic in the country. The canines sniff hundreds of sweat samples per day to detect COVID patients who display no symptoms. The samples are from local medical volunteers as well as bedridden patients who are not able to show up at testing centers. Thailand's Social Development and Human Security Ministry is in charge of collecting the samples and delivering them to a university in Bangkok where the dogs operate. Researchers say the dogs can detect a volatile compound secreted in the sweat of COVID-infected people.
The distinctive scent is what would appear after there's an infection. Different kinds of viruses will produce different kinds of scents, therefore they contain different smells. The canines are very sensitive towards scents excreted from human body, and they have better scents by hundreds of millions of times better than us humans, without even having to come into close contact with the virus.
Researchers say the dogs have a success rate of over 90% in detecting asymptomatic COVID patients. They say the canines have gone through thousands of samples since early May.
Robots probably will never replace humans, but you must be worried they might steal your job in the future. A cook robot in Spain has risen to fame because of its ability to prepare paella, one of the world's most renowned national dishes. This robot is made up of an electronically controlled stove and a mechanical arm. It can put the already fried ingredients into the pan, add rice to it, and then stir it before pouring in the fish stock. The robot can prepare one paella at a time. However, all the ingredients have to be prepared and measured in advance. The Spanish company behind this product is trying to expand the robot's functionality.
They are designing what we have named Gastro Robot Menu, a robot gastronomic experience. Five chefs from the Basque Culinary Center are developing a five-course menu, so eventually we would take a seat in front of the robot and taste five courses designed by five important chefs.
Enrique says the project has already provoked interest outside Spain. He says some amusement parks and resorts in Japan already have their own paella robots. Paella masters believe the machine is a useful tool for chefs because they can cook many paellas at the same time. As the world continues to battle COVID-19, people are finding traditional and modern ways of remembering those who have lost their lives due to the pandemic. A public library in the U.S. is commemorating the victims with an origami project. The Greenpoint Public Library in Brooklyn, New York City, has collected 1,000 origami pieces since April. Inspired by the ancient Japanese legend that 1,000 paper cranes can bring well wishes or healing, the library aims to promote hope and a sense of solidarity. The delicate handmade cranes, many of them from recycled paper, are now on display in the library's lobby. The staff hopes that each and every crane brings hope to the community.
We made this for the COVID Remembrance Day event, month-long event. In many cultures, especially in Asian culture, it symbolizes peace, love, recovery, and hope. And especially in Japanese culture, Senbazu, 1,000 paper crane, is really significant. They believe that if one holds 1,000 paper crane, one's wishes come true.
The library has also asked people to come by and drop off their homemade origami as a memorial to the COVID-19 victims. It plans to keep up the display until at least the end of the summer. What was once an underground movement is now all the buzz. After a 17-year hiatus, billions of red-eyed cicadas are crawling their way above ground in the United States. These cicadas are known as brood eggs, and they are beginning to emerge from the depth of the earth in a dramatic fashion. These birds have been sighted in 15 eastern states of America. They are around 4 centimeters in length with unforgettable bright red eyes and iridescent wings. Experts say these insects don't hibernate. In fact, they grow slowly underground for 17 years before they emerge to mate.
There are several misconceptions about periodical cicadas. One is that they're locusts. They're not locusts. Locusts are grasshoppers. Cicadas are much more closely related to aphids. There's another misconception that cicadas are harmful. Cicadas are not harmful. They don't bite. They don't sting. They're not going to harm you or your pet, so you don't have to fear the cicada.
Michael says cicadas tend to thrive on the edges of sunlit forests where it's warmer. They live above ground as adults for about 3 weeks, long enough to reproduce before dying. They lay eggs inside young tree branches, which hatch a few weeks later to restart the cycle. This year's cicada class will bore into the ground and won't emerge until 2038.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Peruvian zoo has showed off two baby crocodiles that were born through artificial insemination. The zoo in Lima celebrated their birth 3 months ago. Zookeepers say the two crocs are in good health. The American crocodiles now weigh around 70 grams each and measure 26 centimeters in length. However, it's too early to determine the gender of the newborns. American crocodile is in danger of extinction due to pollution and habitat loss.
A French musician has come up with an innovative idea to end his pandemic hiatus, performing on top of a mountain in Swiss Alps. Tiho performed on a platform at an altitude of 3,000 meters. The 30-year-old artist braved sub-zero temperatures in April to perform. He also had to overcome his fear of heights. Tiho has not performed in public for more than a year due to COVID-19 restrictions. He says the lockdown offers him a good chance to become more creative.
I feel like I had a lot of creativity during this period because I was stuck in the studio and a lot of time to make music. So usually when I perform gigs and I don't have so much time to spend in the studio. So today, during these days, is like better.
A music production company organized the show. The small platform was taken up to the resort by helicopter. It took 4 hours to install the setting.
The Chinese version of the Titanic has been created to keep alive memories of the ship over a century after its ill-fated maiden voyage. The full-scale replica will soon be open to the public. It's part of a theme park in Sichuan Province, southwest China. The construction work started 6 years ago, involving over 100 workers. Around 23,000 tons of steel has been used to build a ship, which is 260 meters long. Designers hope that it will attract up to 5 million visitors a year.
This ship is located in the west part of China. It will attract tourists from the world. We estimate that the number of visitors will be between 2 million to 5 million in a year. This tourist volume should guarantee the return of our investment.
Everything in the duplication, from its cabins to the doorknobs, is identical to the original Titanic. Spending one night on the five-star ship costs around $150. The original luxury vessel sank in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg. Over 1,500 people died in the accident.
Animals living in the Paris Zoological Park will soon be able to see visitors again after months of just interacting with zookeepers due to COVID-19 restrictions. The zoo is preparing to reopen next week with limited numbers of visitors and obligatory health protocols. During the shutdown, the park welcomed over 60 new babies, including baboons, penguins, and flamingos. Experts believe the reopening will reawaken animals' curiosity.
Seeing public again will reawaken the animals' curiosity. They also look at the visitors. Some are very interested. You'll see the seals when they're with small children. It's part of enriching their environment to see a little bit of people, of diversity. So it's good for everyone.
The park, which temporarily closed last October, houses 2,500 animals of 234 species. France is now easing its COVID-19 restrictions and plans to reopen museums, zoos, shops, and cinemas on May the 19th.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.